Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Wednesday, December 28, 2016. The U.S. says it will continue to work to end the violence against South Sudanese civilians, despite defeated United Nations Security Council vote.
Unfortunately, certain members of the council made the decision to protect some of the parties to the conflict and send a message that they support the status quo.
And Uganda officials say they're committed to providing education for South Sudanese children.
These children, when we bring them up well, and when they're in governance in future, they will say, we don't need our country to go back to a situation of war.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. U.S. State Department Deputy Spokesperson Mark Toner took a moment out of the hour-long press briefing yesterday to speak about the failed United Nations Security Council resolution last week to enforce targeted sanctions and an arms embargo on South Sudan. Toner says Security Council members who voted against the resolution last week are sending the wrong message to perpetrators of the three-year-long conflict.
Unfortunately, certain members of the council made the decision to protect some of the parties to the conflict and send the message that they support the status quo in South Sudan. What we don't want is that the results of this vote be misinterpreted by the perpetrators of violence in South Sudan. We're going to continue, we the United States, to be watching their actions closely. We'll continue to work and demand their accountability.
The State Department also released a statement yesterday welcoming the government of Sudan's efforts to improve humanitarian access in parts of the country. Last week, Sudan revised directives that improve humanitarian access in the country. The State Department praised the move, especially the decision to give a United Nations interagency team access to Golo, which is located in central Darfur. The department reports the convoy was the first civilian aircraft to land in Golo in 5 years. The U.S. says it believes the new directives will facilitate efforts to get aid to the most needy. At least 300,000 people have been killed and 2.5 million displaced in Darfur since the conflict began there in 2003, according to the United Nations. Education officials in Uganda's Yumbe district say they want to make certain that South Sudanese refugee children in the BDBD settlement get the same quality of education as nationals, despite inadequate resources in the camp. Simon Peter Apiku visited the BDBD refugee settlement and has this report for VOA from the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
Officials say the constant stream of South Sudanese refugees into the BDBD camp has put a severe strain on public schools, which did not have the capacity to absorb the refugees. They say as a result, the UN Refugee Agency UNHCR and its partners quickly began constructing 10 primary and secondary schools in the settlement and recruiting teachers. John Angulibo, the Yumbe District Inspector of Schools, says by December, the camp's population had grown to more than 260,000 refugees, many of them school-aged children. The camp had just opened in August. Angulibo says his office is trying to make sure that the refugee schools have the same educational standards as other schools in the district.
We also give supervision support to see to it that the teachers implement the curriculum of the country as required.
And Angulibo says the government tries to make sure the refugee schools have the same support systems in place as the public schools.
We also try to help them establish management structures because these children have got parents and the community around needed to be organized so that they establish school management committees and then parents, teachers association.
One of the biggest challenges, Ngulibo says, is finding competent teachers who speak the same languages as the South Sudanese children.
We worked together with the agency, that is Window Trust, first of all to make sure that the teachers recruited to work there are qualified professionally, and that we did together. As we talk now, there are over 300 teachers that Window Trust recruited, and we were fully involved in doing that.
But South Sudanese teachers in the camp complain that some of the conditions they expected to meet are extreme, considering they too are refugees. South Sudanese refugee Samuel Amule says he used to teach in Morobo of the former Central Equatorial State. He says he applied for a teaching job at a settlement camp, but the interviewers insisted he produce originals for his documents, which he could not quickly retrieve from the Ministry of Public Service.
As I was being a teacher in South Sudan, all my original documents were being left in the public service. Then to be waiting for what? For increment or promotion, so what was in South Sudan? This is the system. So the original certificate were remained there in the public service. So we did the interview with that original certificate. This is why I missed the sons, because of the original documents. They cannot consider the photocopies.
Amule says because of the document restriction and other conditions, only a handful of qualified South Sudanese teachers are hired.
The Sudanese are very few, but the rest of the majority of the teachers are all nationals.
And Amule says the school facilities constructed by Window Trust are inadequate. Window Trust argues it had only a few weeks to put up the makeshift structures made out of timber and plastic sheeting, but Amule says the refugee students deserve better.
The classes are Sudan just on the stones and the underground. But if the cell did not sit well, which means that it can bring poor performance. This one I cannot say that maybe they will do well, because if the cell was not sit comfortable, others are writing on the stones, others just dirtying themselves on the ground like this.
Since there are not enough schools to accommodate all of the children, thousands like Patrick Duko remain at home. Speaking in Arabic, the 17-year-old boy from Yei in the former Central Equatorial State says he hopes to be enrolled in the next academic year.
When I tried to enroll in school, they told me to wait until the next term. They said the school had enough pupils.
Other children, like Peter Samuel Nimo, are more fortunate. Peter says, despite the lack of space, textbooks, and pencils, he is happy to be enrolled in the Rockland Primary School, located in the Bidibidi Refugee Settlements Zone 1.
In Yei, they are not teach well. Teachers are not there, but here they teach well.
Ngulibo says it is important to invest in the education of these children if South Sudan is to have peace.
We believe that the future leaders who are likely to control, to address those problems are these children coming. You know, elders have spoiled our nation. These children, when we bring them up well and when they are in governance in future, they will say, we don't need our country to go back to situation of war.
For VOA News, I am Simon Peter Apiku in Kampala.
A South Sudanese activist and lawyer says life in exile is difficult. Samuel Dung Lok says since fleeing South Sudan in 2013 and taking refuge in Kenya, he has had to struggle to provide for his family. Dung says he's hopeful that the three-year-long conflict will end soon and he will finally be able to return to South Sudan and advocate for change. He tells my colleague, John Tanza, he fled the country because his life was in danger after he petitioned the Supreme Court on President Salva Kiir's decision to prevent former SPLM Secretary General Pagana Moom from leaving South Sudan or talking to the media following a disagreement within the ruling party.
I left South Sudan in August, the 10th of 2013. I came by air from Juba to Nairobi.
And why did you leave? From my research, I understand you were having one of the successful law firm in Juba, and you've been handling quite a number of high-profile cases, and you have a track record of success. Why did you leave your country?
John, the space for professional and also other activists was closing day by day. But for me, what caused me to leave the country was the case against the chairman of the SPLM, President Salva Kiir, when we represented Pagana Moom, who was by then the Secretary General of the SPLM. And we petitioned the Supreme Court of South Sudan because the chairman of the SPLM violated the constitution of South Sudan by preventing Pagana Moom, the Secretary General of the SPLM, from traveling or even talking or speaking. So we felt that these are fundamental freedoms and they are enshrined into the constitution of South Sudan, and nobody should really prevent any citizen from exercising them. And as the case progresses, I received threat and I decided to leave the country.
And when you left the country, you came to Nairobi. How is life in Nairobi? I know you're somebody who is used to making your own money and putting food on the table for your family. How is life for you in Nairobi?
Life, of course, was difficult and still very difficult because I used to generate some income when I was practicing in South Sudan. But at the moment, I don't do anything. I have family to take care of, school fees, and so other many expenses. So it's really, really difficult. But when I first came, I was supported by the Human Rights Defenders and other organizations for almost 1 year, and then later on they stopped the support. So we are struggling like any other refugee to make a living. We get support sometimes from our relatives who are abroad. They can send you some money. But it's difficult, very, very difficult.
And how do you feel? How do you really feel? Because your country is just 1 hour flight from Nairobi. If you're driving, it's a matter of 12 to 14 hours you're at home. How do you feel? Do you feel like you want to go back home?
Yeah, I really feel that I want to go back home. But of course, John, as a human being, you need to have some freedoms in your own country. If those freedoms are not there, then you better stay or exile yourself, because without freedom of expression, freedom of associations, freedom of enjoying your life as a citizen of that particular country, then it doesn't make any sense. People in South Sudan now, they don't enjoy their freedoms. You know, they meet death every day. You know, even though now I'm in refuge, I sympathize with those people who are living in South Sudan. Even though my life is difficult here, but they are living the most difficult life in South Sudan. So I wish that the country get back to normalcy, and then each and every citizen can really enjoy peace and freedom of expression, freedom of movement, right to life, and all other fundamental freedoms.
And when I was speaking to some government officials here over the weekend, I asked them that I've seen a lot of South Sudanese in Nairobi who have taken refuge, and they're telling me that they're not able to go back home because they fear for their lives. And this particular government official, I would not mention the name here, he said these are perceived fear. There's nothing that will happen to South Sudanese if they go back home. How do you react to that?
I think I'm sorry that they are not honest. as government officials, they are not honest to the people of South Sudan. You know, death is a daily occurrence in South Sudan. And for those of us who always look at the social media, if there is anything our people write most of the time in social media, is rest in peace. Because our people are dying every day, John, every hour, okay? You cannot have a day without, you know, paying condolences to 10 or 20 or 15 people from South Sudan who are dying, you know, not because of illnesses, not because of anything, but because of their life being taken by their brothers who are carrying guns. So I think even those officials, you know, who are in Juba, if you see them, the way they live in hotels which are heavily guarded. They move with vehicles which are heavily armed, you know. And this is an indication that there is fear. There is a lot of insecurity in the country.
That's Samuel Dung Lok, a South Sudanese activist and lawyer, and now a refugee in Kenya. He was speaking to John Tanza in Nairobi, Kenya, earlier today. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. What's it like for a professional South Sudanese woman trying to balance work and family? Find out when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan. Or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what's the best and worst thing about the first day of school?
You get to meet new friends, you get to interact with others apart from home. But still, I will still have that part of being missing my family, my siblings, all the laughter, all the jokes we've done. So it's going to be a bit 50-50, actually.
All in all, the worst thing is also, since it is a new environment, adaptivity matters a lot. And also, you start counting down, when shall I get back, what can I do with this and that.
It is the best when I meet my friends, because it makes me to socialize with them. Because if I'm alone at home, sometimes I feel lonely if there is nobody at home. But if I came and I got my friends, to feel happy to be among them.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. After a spokesperson for the President of the Republic of Congo said on Twitter yesterday that President Denis Sassou Nguesso would be meeting with U.S. President-elect Donald Trump, a Trump spokeswoman said no meeting was planned with President Sassou. Sassou spokesman Thierry Mangala had said Sassou, a member of the African Union's high-level committee on Libya, and Trump were scheduled to talk on Tuesday about the political turmoil in Libya and other African issues. Later, Trump spokeswoman Hope Hicks said there had never been a meeting scheduled, and there would not be one before Trump takes office on January 20th. Trump has been holding a series of meetings at his Palm Beach, Florida home, and meetings with prospective cabinet officials and others at his Trump Tower in New York City ever since winning the November presidential election. Trump did not win the popular U.S. vote, but received more votes in the Electoral College, pushing him past the 270-vote threshold for election, affirming he will be the nation's 45th president. Some professional South Sudanese women say while they don't mind competing with men for jobs, they face enormous challenges in trying to find a balance between their roles as professionals, mothers, and wives. Dimo Silva Aurelo has more for VOA from Torit.
Some women say they can and do apply for jobs normally, dominated by their male counterparts. But they say really challenge is balancing that work and taking care of their children and a household all at once. Jacqueline Okwea is a driver and auto mechanic in Turit. Okwea says she has competed and defeated men in the 10 years she has worked outside the home as a driver and a mechanic at the UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, and other places in South Sudan. Okwea says during her professional life, she has been quite successful competing against men for the same jobs and getting hired.
So I pushed myself and God also helped me, and I succeed in driving and engineering. When I was in Juba, people really like appreciate me to do this work. I was a nanny instructor in Bill Farm for 5 years. I'm driving, so I'm teaching driving course in soldiers. Wherever these generals, they brought their cars to repair. For them, they like my team. So because I used to make sure this car, it will become very good car. I cannot spare somebody car. So they also express, if they are bringing the cars to the garage, they're looking after me. Where's the other lady? Where's the other lady? Where's the jack? So I will take them to my team.
Okwea says as much as she loves working driving because it enables her to put food on the table, being a full-time auto mechanic has affected her relationship with her children, whom she hardly gets to spend time with anymore.
Especially my last born, she's a daughter. My last born, I remove her from breastfeeding with 1 year and 2 months. Yes. I'll go at 6 morning, I'll come until 6 evening. I know the child is missing me seriously at home. Even my daughter, the time I was remove her from breastfeeding, he doesn't want to stay with me. They are staying with my mom. When I call her, I want to carry my child, she will refuse me totally. Just I love my mom.
Adong Florence, a journalist, says she is able to balance between domestic chores and her job outside the home. Florence says she purposely married a fellow journalist who understands the nature of her job so as to avoid domestic misunderstanding.
When I was not married, I was able to do journalism more perfect than it is now. Because when I compare it with married life, although my husband understands me, thank God, he knows because the profession I do, he also did it. So all of us are journalists. He understands. I sometimes go back home late. Like if there's a news article that I have to write, it takes time. And sometimes you go to the field to look for a story. You come back when you're tired. And beside that, I'm a mother, breastfeeding at the same time. So I find it difficult. But when I compare it to when I was not married, it was so easy. Even if I go late, because the child is not crying, my husband will not complain, my mother understands the work that I do. But now, I'll be writing and thinking about my child. Let me do it first, and I go and breastfeed my child. Let me go home, and I cook food for my husband.
Adong says despite the challenges she faces as a working woman, she would never consider giving up her paid job.
Journalism is so interesting. It's a good job that you will reach a mass of people, not even one person. When you're on air or elsewhere writing a newspaper, if you write a newspaper, someone reads your name and that person finds your article so interesting, will be like, may I know where Adong Flora is? Because her story is so interesting. That's something that I like so much about journalism. It makes you popular, you reach a mass of people, and you interact with other people.
Many women typically worked at hospitals across South Sudan. 23-year-old Betty Achiro is a midwife at the Turit Civil Hospital in Imotong State. Achiro says she became a midwife to help bring down the country's high maternal mortality rate, but says she hardly ever gets to see her husband because her shifts are often at night.
When you go to the market, you don't have to buy a sauce for only one day. You buy for 4 days or five so that you can balance well with work. And sometimes, like when you're on night duty, your husband may mistrust you. She may think maybe you're going different in some different place. Yes, you're going for work. So what we do is you let him take you up to where you work. Although it is not easy, but you make sure you wake up early in the morning. You prepare, like if you're for evening, that starts from 2. You make sure like before reaching two, you're done with your work. So I prepare you go there early. Sometimes when you reach there late, they quarrel. They say, why did you come late? So you, it's like they don't understand that you have families at home. So you begin explaining. Then they say, is it you who knows how to take care of your children or your husband? You say, it's not like that. Only that the work is heavy, you have to sometimes give time at home. Because balancing is not easy, but at least that's why sometimes they give off days for us. Like you work for 5 days, or four, they give you 2 off. So that 2 offs is there. You make sure you create bonding at your home with the people at home.
Achiro says husbands who don't understand the demands of their spouse's work will quarrel with their wives. She says she is glad she is not one of them. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
South Sudanese citizens who have been forced to live outside their country because of the ongoing conflict say they miss home but have found a way to cope with their homesickness. They get on social media. Magume Davis Wakarinj has more for VOA from Kigali, Rwanda.
Many South Sudanese who live in Uganda say they miss the good old days when they were surrounded by relatives and friends and ate the staple food in their communities. Lamson Leukwes, who hails from Reng, was studying in Uganda when war erupted in South Sudan in late 2013. He says since then he has not been able to return home.
I really miss home. I'm just getting stressed all the time, thinking about home. Much I think a lot. There's no way. Just I love my home to go back, and I see.
For the past 3 years, Kwesi has been living in Bunga, a Kampala suburb. Kwesi says most of his relatives fled South Sudan when fighting broke out and are scattered all over the world. He says some went to the neighboring countries of Kenya and Sudan, while others live further away in Europe and even in the United States.
I just have to communicate with the phone and that's all. Whether Facebook, call them and maybe text them a message, that's all I can do. Because also phones are very expensive here. The moment you're calling also, it consumes my time all the time. So it's very difficult to call them all the time.
Besides communicating with his people on social media, Kwesi says he frequently goes to places like Soyabunga and Arua Park, where many South Sudanese hang out. Like Kwesi, Sunday Apio, a second-year student of business studies at St. Lawrence University in the Ugandan capital, Kampala, has not been able to visit her home for 2 years. Apio says she misses her parents and siblings terribly, but will not travel back home because of widespread insecurity, especially on the Juba Nimeri Road. She also says she cannot afford an airplane ticket. Apio says her parents have urged her to stay put.
They will call and they will be like, you have to understand, you are now in university, you have to know the situation we are also in, so you should not depend like you are a young girl. You have to understand and you know the situation, so you should not be like, every time I want to go like usual we do. So this time, they called you, they advised you, you have to be strong. What we are going through is also not all that easy.
Apio says she can't wait to go back home once the security situation improves along the Juba Nimeri Road. She says she longs to shop again in Juba's Konyokonyo market.
Thing like that we can eat in Juba. Those are the tamia, tahnia, kudura. It's actually a lot of things, but those of kudura, we can get it here, but only that is what? Expensive. And those of tahnia also, they are there in Owido. We can buy them, but what? It is expensive. We miss actually, you know, like for me specifically, I stay in what? In Rock City. So I really miss that, and because they look like mountains. So sometimes you feel like seeing it, but you couldn't. That is what I miss.
Apio says she also misses the local music that used to play on local South Sudanese radio stations. She says sometimes she has to follow postings on social media to get updates on the latest music and show business news back home. Apio says she hopes one day peace will return and she will be able to travel back to South Sudan by road without worrying about security conditions along the Juba Nimeri Road. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinj in Kigali, Rwanda.
And that's our show for this Wednesday. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes and vehicles. Please join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.